you're about to kick and scream. Stuff and things to make the people get out the seat. Everybody is good if you wanna clap your hands and think you're beat. Come on down to the front, but you can feel the beat. From the left to right, to the back, to the middle, and the front.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by A16 Restaurant in San Francisco, located in the Marina neighborhood. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversation covers the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking food headlines with Zachary Cohen and the Hot Five. The good food movement continues to dominate traditional media and the beautiful world of social media. From users of food stamps, the benefits of nuts, and critics of local voyeurism. In the studio, we have Zachary Cohen, 2009 Food Buzz blog winner for Best Green Sustainable Blog. Welcome to Hot Grease, Zach.
Thank you, Nicole. Pleasure to be here.
So first up, we have the face of food stamp users. There's an article in the City Room blog in the New York Times entitled In School, In Debt, and Asking for Help. There was a New York NYU grad student with about $100,000 in student loans, and he's actually talking about his journey or the day he went to get food stamps in Williamsburg. What are your thoughts?
That was definitely a great article. The City Room has become a great little local blog, obviously staffed by New York Times writers who are so excellent at getting that color and drama into even a blog post. As a blogger, it's remarkable to see what a trained journalist at the Times can do. The piece is interesting, obviously, because there's a great sense of drama. This young guy who's a journalism student and has put himself into debt. Obviously, journalism is a world that is undergoing a massive overhaul, and the idea of going to journalism school as for professionalism. And
I know, interesting, right?
Yeah, but you know. We need journalists and we need that kind of work. At the same time, we got to figure out how to pay for it. The idea of using local ads to pay for investigative journalism just doesn't fly anymore.
So do you think there are tons of students, graduate students, or people like the guy Ryan in the article that are getting food stamps and we just don't know about? Or,
you know, I think what Ryan seemed to say in the article is that, you know, there are people in his community, I think he was a Williamsburg resident, who were starting to get food stamps and not that kind of stigma about signing up for food stamps and going down to the city center and signing up for it and standing in lines for 5 hours. You know, the idea of standing there, you know, 22 or 23 or 25-year-old guy or girl sitting there with families in the cold, you know, who are probably don't have the $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 in the bank to pay their groceries this week or next week or for the next month. You know, he felt a real sense of guilt. And at the same time, he needs this help right now. And, there was a lot of drama in that article. I mean, for a blog post, the Times is really it's a tremendous thing, but again, that stigma, I can't imagine what it would feel like to just be painted into such a corner that you need to, he talked about, you know, making big pots of chili and black bean soup to feed himself. And
I missed that part. He said something about chili and stuff.
Yeah, he said he made black bean soup and chili.
Oh yeah, he did say that.
And just to save money, and he said he was going off meat. I mean, obviously that really stuck out at me, the idea of I'm giving up meat as a way to cut down on the cost. And I mean, that struck at me because, you know, meat is a luxury. We've come to think of it as an entitlement, something we should have every day. And I remember being in a grocery store in the Hudson Valley recently, there was a in the meat department, there was a section that said, a big sign, like a retro sign with kind of graphics from the 50s or 60s saying, you know, eat meat 3 times a day. And I'm sitting there like, oh,
wow.
My God. Yeah, it's just like, you know, I'm not going to get into the specifics of
maybe that. A bit much for some of the people in the local food movement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I eat meat, I love meat, but I would rather pay more for good meat and eat it less frequently.
So on to another face of food stamp users. There was there's a Washington University study that came out last week, and it says that most Black kids know about food stamps, and 90% compared to 37% of white kids have been on food stamps at some point during their childhood. What are your thoughts? And this Dr. Mark Rank, a sociologist at Washington University, actually led this study. What are your thoughts on this study?
Well, it's certainly alarming, and it's unfortunately it's not surprising, and that just it's one of those things. I think there are some issues with the report that you could definitely elaborate on the idea of what was the methodology, how long were they on food stamps. There are times, what about other minorities and Latinos or Asians or anything else, any other communities that might, have high incidence of having to use food stamps. Look, it's a real issue, and the social justice issues are alive and well, and I think they're intimately wrapped up in issues of sustainability.
Yeah, I think this study actually, it was a 30-year-old, they used national data from the past 30 years, and they used families of four, and the annual take-home couldn't exceed 22,000, but they only used Black and white kids. They didn't use any other things, and I guess my thought when I initially read this, it was just kind of blank. It's like, okay, so kids know about food stamps. What is this linked to? I didn't get the connection in the study. Did you? Or
no? It seemed a little vacuous. And actually, I think that's a legitimate criticism of that piece that we shared. And I'm sure you're going to put it on your site so that the viewers can take a look later on. But I think that, because it's a study, it's important to take notice. But I think the larger issue, and look, I'm not, there's a lot of suffering going on right now, but there's always a lot of suffering. But I think the issue is, these are issues that the sustainable food community has to engage. We cannot let this become a movement of elitists or wealthy people. It's certainly not already, but the tendency to flush that way is always there. And it's important to stay grounded that getting local foods and back into urban areas, this idea of an urban desert, areas of urban cities and metropolitan areas that only have bodegas or fast food joints, that to me is intimately linked in that.
Totally. Yeah. So talking about bodegas and things you can pick up at bodegas, I think maybe in Bed-Stuy some of my bodegas have nuts. There's a great article in AJC. I don't know if this was a national syndicated article, but the title of it is called Healthy Eating: Nuts Get a Image Boost.
Yeah.
Almonds, peanuts, and pecans, pistachios, walnuts, they all suffer from an image problem because of the high calories. But a lot of people are not talking about the positive. So some of the large distributors of nuts and some of the local ones are like giving this whole thing a new image and talking about the high antioxidants and fiber and protein and whatever.
Well, so, I love that article said that nutrients start with the word NUT, the letter
NUT. I know,
N-U-T,
that was
nut.
Like the, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought that was cute. But, I think we're starting to come out of this loop we've been in where caloric intake and calories have been so focused on.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing. It'll probably always be with us, whether it's the Atkins diet or the cabbage soup diet or the grapefruit diet.
What about the new one, the cookie diet?
Yeah. I mean, look, America loves these kind of, for all its, awesomeness, our country loves these kind of food trends and this idea that we've got a perfect fix or a pill, and if you just cut out carbs, you're going to lose weight, or if you just cut down your calories. The reality is, a more traditional way of eating. I know the Weston A. Price Foundation just had their annual meeting this past weekend. That's something where you're talking about traditional diets that blend in everything, that blend in fat and calories and protein and carbohydrates and everything we need.
Well, I think one of the most interesting notes at the bottom of this article, how they talked about the USDA in meal planning, they equal a half ounce of nuts to 1 ounce of meat. So, what people are saying about less meat and
look,
carbon footprint.
Yeah,
well, so
nuts have great protein quality. I eat nuts all the time. I buy
Ditto.
In bulk.
I have almonds in my bag every day.
It is a great thing to carry around as a snack. Raw almonds or raw nuts and fermenting them, and it's good stuff.
All right, Zach, you're going to stay with us the entire 30 minutes. We're going to take a break and come back with more Zachary Cohen.
Maybe there's something wrong with his phone. Or maybe it's morning and the thrill is gone. And I'm not sure if I'm still respected. And I'm not in a rush to feel rejected. Not by Tony. Tony don't care no more. He doesn't want me there no more. I just want to know what I did wrong. Damn, this will make a real good song. And I don't have these nights so often. I wish I could take my mind off them. But I really like Tony. He wasn't just some regular guy.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We're continuing our conversation with Zachary Cohen. He's a local food activist living in New York City and passionate about the intersection of the local food movement and social media. Zachary can be found on Twitter at Zach Cohen. Zachary, you have a very interesting story. It starts with Wall Street. Do tell.
Yeah, well, I came back from college. I'm from New York City and born and raised in Manhattan. And I went to school down in New Orleans. I went to Tulane University, a fantastic school. And really, that's where my cultural senses became alive. And music and food and the attitude of a slow life really formulated down there. But I came back to Manhattan 2003, 2004. And we were in the midst of this enormous financial boom. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I thought I would maybe go into publishing or something in the creative worlds. And yeah, I mean, basically there were jobs to be had, well-paying jobs that if you weren't an idiot, you could get and hold on to. And I definitely, a lot of my friends were in that world, and I took a couple of jobs and had some fun, and it was actually really informative.
So when did you completely transition from the financial world into the world of sustainable food?
You know, my food consciousness had been growing even as I was ensconced in this financial services world, which is a sophisticated, intelligent world, lots of very ambitious and amazing people. But at the same time, it was very focused on financial remuneration. Nothing wrong with that, but it just wasn't jiving with my soul and with my body and with my heart. And as you know, I was given the opportunity because I was in finance to eat well and to eat around the city. And the more,
that makes sense, huh?
Yeah, I didn't spend money at clubs or on illegal things. So I would just go spend my money on good restaurants. And I would, you know, find myself talking with servers and chefs and waitresses, maitre d's about the menu. I remember very succinctly one evening being out with a bunch of fellow traders. And I traded oil and gas derivatives for a couple of banks. And I remember everyone's talking about, you know, the money they made last week and this week and what are their trades tomorrow. And I'm sitting there staring at the menu, like deciphering.
Wow.
You know.
That sounds, I know that story, yeah, definitely.
Just, I'm sitting there staring like, where'd this mash come from? Is this arugula local? And, you know, the guys around me are like, what is this kid? So, you know, basically I was given an opportunity to leave, which is a euphemism for getting fired.
You're funny. Yeah. So who is your greatest inspiration in the food world?
You know, I was just at a great dinner party last night held by Lauren Spear. She's a sweet blog of mine. She's a really good person, really great voice in the city. She's really a cocktail enthusiast. But we were talking about this, and I was looking through her library, and I saw The Art of Eating by M.F.K. Fisher.
Yeah.
And I think that when I first left the banking world, M.F.K. Fisher's The Gastronomical Me was a book that I opened.
You must tell our listeners. Some listeners may not know who M.F.K. Fisher is.
Yeah, M.F.K. Fisher, Mary Frances Kennedy Fisher, was a woman from Southern California. This is in the 20s and 30s, if my dates are right, traveled to France with her husband and had this kind of awakening, this food awakening, very similar to what Julia Child would go through.
Wouldn't you call her the mother of modern food writing? Definitely.
Without a doubt. I think I don't think you see a slow food movement in America. I don't think you see Alice Waters, Michael Pollan, Amanda Hesser and and all the other names that I'm forgetting and will kick myself later for. You don't see those without MFK Fisher.
Totally.
James Beard and Julie Childs, of course. But it started for me with MFK Fisher. I read The Gastronomical Me, and it was probably the book that set me on this course. And
so you have some of the best tweets and the best Foursquare locations. I definitely think you're probably the person that was like made me do a Google search. What the hell is, Foursquare? Yeah. And I got on Foursquare. I'm just curious to know, because your life seems so, exciting. What's a typical day for Zachary Cohen in the world of food and social media and blogging and Foursquaring and all that stuff?
It's funny. I get this all the time. People are like, "You're Zach Cohen."
It happened when we were here.
In too much. Yeah, we just met someone outside. They're like, "You're Zach." Oh, you're Zach Cohen. It's a lot less glamorous than it sounds. The reality is, I'm working a lot. I'm writing sometimes as much as 6 or 8 hours a day. I'm very active on Twitter. I've made that conscious decision months ago to be extremely active, to be extremely transparent, to involve my personal life with what I'm now regarding as my professional life. And, things like Foursquare, which is this great...
Please tell folks what Foursquare is.
Foursquare is a fantastic service. It launched at South by Southwest in, I believe it was March or April this year. It's basically a geolocating check-in service. It's a kind of a game that allows people to know where you are around the city. So, for instance, if I'm in the West Village and I check in at Del Anima, a fantastic Italian restaurant on Hudson Street, all of my friends on Foursquare, I think it's something like 200 or 300 people, know that I'm at Del Anima, and that, if it's a Sunday afternoon, they can come by and maybe have a glass of wine with me.
And the coolest thing about it, you can put tips. So if you're there, actually have some of your tips tagged.
Yeah, they're fun.
You can put tips. If you're at Roberta's, you can write in there, try the such-and-such pizza.
Well, I got to say, Roberta's is fantastic. They just showed me some amazing hospitality, but I had a bib lettuce salad that was...
Shout out to Roberta's.
Bib lettuce salad that was fresh and a sherry vinaigrette was perfectly dressed and... gorgonzola and some walnuts, so it speaks to your nuts thing. It was fantastic, so I have to thank these guys out here.
So tell us about the development of your reality TV cooking show, your travel education show, your blog. You have so many great things and ideas and things in the works.
This all actually started before I even started a blog. I sat down and after reading 15 or 20 books last summer, summer of 2008, and I said to myself, I was watching a lot of TV programming. I was watching shows like Lydia's Italy and Colameco's Food Show, and as well as more traditional programming on Food Network. And I really felt that food programming on television needed to take an evolutionary step forward. It had devolved into what now Michael Pollan has talked about, this kind of competition-based, personality-based, where there's no skills being learned, and it's just about the people who are doing it. It's about Rachel. It's about
food porn is what they're
doing. Food porn, or just kind of mindlessness. And look, I'm a fan of the Food Network. I will still watch some shows, but I think the reality is it's become So You Think You Can Dance or American Idol. It's become a popularity contest. And I think there's a great need. I think the American public is calling for something that just gets back to basics. The reality is the generations that are coming up now just don't know how to cook. They never watch their parents cook. And they don't have the basic skills of sauteing or brining or making, soaking beans overnight. The things that we associate with the most basic elements of cooking, we just don't have it. I didn't have it. I had to teach myself from scratch. So basically I started from there and I wrote a reality TV based show that was cooking, education, travel, that would go around the country and basically resuscitate or what I like to say, unearth the treasures of American cooking, because in every city and every town and every region of this country, we have a culinary heritage that is as important and as significant as, cheese that from the Langhe region in Italy or offal in Lyon. That we have things around this country that are prized and precious and,
Yeah, very briefly, you were telling me earlier, I know you have another project coming up this Friday. I think it's really cool. Please share with the listeners about what you're doing at 92nd Street Y.
This is exciting. So this Friday evening, 7 o'clock at the 92nd Street Y in Tribeca, I was asked to give a talk. It's turned into a discussion, actually, with one of the sponsors of the dinner, a group called Chazon, which is a Jewish organization that works in sustainable food and sustainable activities. it's going to be a panel discussion with me and a lady named Nancy from Hazon. And we're going to be talking about, you know, the intersection of Judaism and local foods. Obviously, in Judaism, there's a kind of an idea called Tikkun Olam, which is healing the world. It's one of our main missions, and something that as a Jew is kind of inculcated in you at an early age. So this idea of Tikkun Olam, you know, restoring the world, restoring health, and empowering is something that I think perfectly dovetails with the sustainable local foods community. And I mean, you know, whether it's farmers markets or keeping money in state or in regions or creating jobs or just healing the earth and healing our bodies, healing our minds, you know, I think there's an absolute perfect dovetail there. And it's something that I'm really interested in exploring. And I probably will do so on my blog in the coming months as this debate gets underway. But it's something that I can I'm motivated to speak to, and it's something that I would like to see more Jewish organizations get interested. But I don't want to limit it to just Jews. I mean, one of the funniest things I that's come upon lately, I actually use a raw milk delivery service in New York City.
What's the name?
It's called Utter Milk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're totally legal, so you know I'll probably go to jail for this.
I was just thinking, are they legal?
Oh no. But this is really funny because it's a Muslim family in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
Going and buying from Mennonite and Amish farmers in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and delivering it to Jews like me on the Upper West Side. It's kind of talk about peace on earth. And I think it's just like the idea of the, you know, sustainable food is a rallying point, that it doesn't really matter Jewish, Muslim, you know, Methodist, Baptist, Protestant,
right.
C of E. That basically it's non-denominational, obviously, but that it's the kind of thing that people who are interested in the idea of healing, of restoration, of resuscitation of our heritage can rally around, and that's all it requires.
Well, we'll definitely put the link in our tags on heritageradionetwork.com under Hot Grease, the link to the 92nd Street Y event. After we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more Zach Cohen. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. You're just listening to Adidas by Killer Mike. I actually met him in the airport coming back from San Francisco this weekend. And this program is actually sponsored by A16, which is ironically in San Francisco, a great pizza, wine spot in Marina neighborhood. Had a great dinner there on Saturday. Shout out to the, I don't know if she's the wine director. Her name is it Shondella? Shondella, I think. And Christy, who they took care of us there at A16. I think I had the fennel sausage pizza with broccoli rabe and cheese and garlic, great wine. I had an appetizer. It was like calamari with white beans. The food was delicious. So if you're in the San Francisco area actually listening or visiting, definitely go to A16. I think they have a great cookbook that's out as well. Maybe James Beard nominated cookbook. I'm not sure. But a great place for great wine. The wine list is amazing. So we want to thank them today for sponsoring Hot Grease. Let me give a Southern Girls hug always to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Zach, you still sizzle, baby. So you're the perfect guy for the Hot Five.
Bring it. Bring it. I do sizzle. Like a grass-fed steak.
Oh my God, you're funny. The Hot Five is a rundown of five things on fire in the good food movement. Influencers, farmers, celebrities, business owners, and chefs dish on their favorite. The Hot Five with Zach.
That's right.
Let's hear. What are you going to do?
Oh, I mean, there's so much happening. I don't even know where to start.
Oh.
I mean, if I had to start with one person.
Well,
right,
let's start with number five.
Oh, you're going to go bottom of the list?
We're going to go five. Well, no order.
Just no order?
No order.
Right now, Liza DeGoya, the it. She is
definitely the it.
She is rocking my world. She is making huge waves. She is going to be a star like nobody's ever seen.
Is it her website is what? Food Curated?
Curated. And she's got a channel on Vimeo, at SkeeterNYC on Twitter. Really, if you can't find people these days, then just forget about it because it's very easy to find people. Liza DeGoya, G-U-I-A.
Please tell our listeners very briefly about the last video what was the name of the last video that she did?
Was it the scratch bread one, or there was another one, wasn't there?
The scratch bread was, I love that one. The historic gastronomy.
Oh, the historic astronomist, right?
Yeah.
This woman in Queens who is so perfectly, you know, intertwines with what I love about this movement is there are so many little angles and passion projects and niches that people can involve themselves with, but it really builds the community. So Liza, who produces these fantastic video segments, very well produced, very well put together, excellently edited, very high quality, you know, in HD and everything, found this lady in Queens. The name is escaping me, so I don't want to mess up, but she's basically recreating these, like, you know, 17th and 18th and 19th century recipes, and they're these dishes that they're so unfamiliar, and yet there's something so, like, primal about them. I guess what was available, obviously, you know, if you're going to cook with recipes from the 1850s, you're obviously going to cook with recipes, you know, with ingredients that were available locally.
Totally.
There was no massive shipping. So
Liza definitely captures the story of the folks in the movement. So what's your number four on the Hot Five list?
You know, I got to say, I'm still captivated by what Rob Smart is doing at Jam Butter on Twitter. Rob is a natural
farmer, right?
Well, he's actually an entrepreneur, and he's an ex tech industry guy, but he's living in Calais, Vermont, very rural Vermont, very involved with the movement up there, and he is starting to figure out ways to rebuild what he calls America's broken food system. And he's right that it's broken. And he's in terms of connections around the country, he is probably the most well-informed in terms of getting sustainable enterprises off the ground.
Is he just on Twitter, or does he have a website?
Oh, he's got a website, everykitchentable.wordpress.com. I think it might be everytable.wordpress.com. But you can just Google Rob Smart, S-M-A-R-T, and he'll come up. He's on Facebook and Twitter, and he's going to be an important guy to watch.
And number three on the Hot Five with Zach Cohen.
I think that industry pushback. I think we are starting to see some serious pushback from.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And that means we're doing good. That means we are starting to make waves. And this niche world is about to take on a whole level, another level of acceleration. But a couple of events with Michael Pollan have generated some controversy.
James McWilliams.
Right. McWilliams is the author of the book who's criticizing the locavore movement. Is that right?
Yeah. It's titled "Just Food: Where Locavores Get It Wrong and How We Can Truly Eat Responsible." Right. Some people say it's not pushback; it's a different view.
Yeah. No, I think James McWilliams is interesting. I've scanned the book. I haven't read it yet. I have to for sure. But I think we have to be open. We can't be absolutists on anything. And if we're extremists if we just, you know, local foods at all costs, I think that's misguided. And we have to listen to reason. And if someone's saying that, look, if you're getting local foods, you have to understand you're putting Kenyan farmers out of business. Well, that's legitimate. And I think we need to, you know,
so
find that.
So you're saying
balance.
Your number three on the Hot Five list is that book by James McWilliams?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, definitely.
Absolutely.
Okay, number two on the Hot Five.
Well, why don't you give me number two and then I'll bounce off it, because I'm going to have something to say.
No, you're Zach Cohen. You have all the knowledge. Number two.
Number two. you know, I think social media in general this year.
Love it. Yeah.
I think this year has shown the local foods and sustainable food movement that social media is something that is so natural, so entwined in our mission. It's a bottom up, people powered movement. People are doing their own things in their spare time. We've got busy mothers. We've got farmers. We've got artisan cheesemakers and winemakers and, you know, bakers. I mean, there's so much going on. Sustainable fishermen. And, you know, I love, got to give a shout out to Luke's Lobster in the city doing a sustainable lobster roll in the East Village.
Well, it's the least expensive lobster roll in the city.
Hey, that, I'm not in banking anymore. That's
so
why
what do
I
you
love
think?
It.
And is that your favorite?
You know, I think it is.
Have you had Red Hook Lobster?
I have. I had it at the Brooklyn Flea Market. In fact, I made my mother and her husband schlep out to Dumbo one day because I insisted.
So
that
you'll
they
take
have it.
You'll take Luke's over Red Hook.
You know, it's a close one. I say eat them both. Okay. Eat them. You know what? Okay. There's occasions for excess. Let's say have them both.
And Luke's Lobster actually is on Twitter. I think they're
at Luke's Lobster. Yeah. And they are actually one of the brands in New York City really getting social media. They are Twittering often. They are offering specials. They did a Veterans Day thing. And they're just kind of sharing their information and their wealth of knowledge. And they are going to do great. And I hope they open more stores. And the more sustainable fishermen we can save, that's
totally.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And number one, Hot Five with Zachary Cohen on Hot Grease.
I have me. Just I'm the.
Well, I.
No, come on.
You sizzle.
Look, I think we're going to see some acceleration here in this movement. And I think that I'm you know, what I would like to see is and I'm kind of breaking some news here maybe, but what I would like to see is a bunch of the top 20 or 30, you know, people involved in this movement band together, whether it's through a website, a new blog. I think we all need to gather our strength and start working together, forgetting about the petty differences and the issues of this or that. But this, we need to move this mainstream. We need to do it now, and the only way to do that is to work together. And that's something that I'm going to be focused like a laser on in the next few months, figuring out how to do this, why to do this, when to do this, who's going to be in charge. And if it means walking away from personal projects, I'm willing to do it. I hope you are. And this is something that in the new year we can really start to activate some real change and bring this movement into the mainstream.
Zach, thanks for chatting with us on Hot Grease. Please tell our listeners your website, your blog, Twitter, all that good stuff one more time.
So I'm at Twitter at Zachary Cohen, at Zachary Cohen. You can find me on Facebook. I'm Googleable. That's my new come on. I'm Googleable. And I blog at Farm to Table, ZacharyAdamCohen.com/Farm to Table. And that's it. It's a pleasure to be here, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We look forward to having you again.
Anytime.
Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled.